Living standards face the greatest threat, we're told, in a generation with no signs of strong wage growth, longer unpaid commuting times and a rise in workforce casualisation, putting more pressure on middle and lower income households than they've faced in the past 20 years. David Hetherington is the executive director from Peer Capita. That's an independent think tank, and they undertook the report, and David's on the line to discuss it, this report with us. G'day, David.
Morning, John.
Look, this report is a bit of a gloomy outlook for PAYE earners in Australia.
Yeah, there are worrying signs. We had a terrific boom, as everybody knows. It started in the 90s, ran through the 2000s, and what happened during that time was that everyone got a share of the uplift in national income. So wage growth was really pretty strong from 2000 through to about 2010-11. What we've seen in the last 3 or 4 years is that wage growth is falling year on year. And in fact, in 2013, real wages, that's what people actually get in terms of purchasing power, went backwards. So the average worker was $120 worse off in that year. And that's the first time that's happened since records began. So we're not saying the disaster is on us, but we're saying, you know, we have to be aware of this and think about the choices we take now.
Yeah. Does that... Let's drill down and try and work out where that comes from. Is that from people being put off work, or is that because of, as you indicate, the casualisation of the workforce, not enough hours for certain people, so the average falls back?
It's not about people being put off work. So we're not talking about unemployment here. That's a kind of separate part of the picture.
Yes.
What it is what the average worker in Australia takes home in their wallet. So it's the kind of purchasing power of their wages, and that's the thing that is concerning. What we've tried to look at is a kind of broader picture of living standards, so we've included things like commuting time. So while throughout that period of the 2000s we had big jumps in workers' incomes, we also saw big increases in unpaid commuting. So the average commuter is spending 56 hours extra a year unpaid on the way to and from work. They're also bearing more risk of volatile hours.
But hasn't always been the case that you don't get paid for commuting?
It's true. That has been the case. But if you think about, you know, the kind of the basket that makes up a quality of life, part of it is how much time you spend on that freeway to and from work. And if you're spending more and more effectively, your purchasing power and earning power is being undermined.
Well, I see in 2002 your report suggests that it was 3 hours and 37 minutes per week travelling to and from work.
That's right.
And in 2014, it increased to 4 hours and 50 minutes.
Yeah, so...
Geez, that's a lot.
It is a lot. And, you know, we all know what's happened to our big cities in that period. We all know that roads have got more congested and that governments have struggled to spend on infrastructure projects. And one of the things we say in the report is the thing that ultimately drives wages is productivity, and to keep productivity moving in the right direction, you've got to be spending on the kind of infrastructure and skills and technology that we haven't done such a great job on in the last few years.
So is that the key to us, stemming this decline and turning it around? Key infrastructure projects, government spending, and I guess after that you get investment from the business side of things?
That's half the answer, absolutely. We need to lift our investment in those kind of hard and soft infrastructure things that lift productivity and drive wages. That's half the answer. The other half, though, is we need to see people who earn their income from wages continuing to get a fair share of that growth. So the first part of the answer is about growing the pie, and the second part is about making sure it's continually divided fairly. One of the findings of our report is that the share of wages in national income fell from about 66% in 2000 to below 60% in 2012. So the share of our total national pie that's going to people who earn their money through working is falling.
Can you interpret how that's come about?
Look, part of it is about changes in our kind of wage bargaining system. So as we all know, union coverage has fallen. Unions cover less people in the workplace, under 20% now, and most of those are in the public sector rather than private sector. So that's meant that workers' bargaining power has been eroded somewhat. And then there are other specifics like kind of, you know, changes to penalty rate regimes and keeping the minimum wage as a constant share of the average wage that are starting to come under pressure too.
But there are laws with regard to award wages, aren't there, for employers that they have to adhere to?
There are, but as I say, the coverage of those laws is getting thinner, so fewer and fewer people are falling under them.
So are you suggesting that there's a lot of tasks being undertaken by people where they're not represented by an award?
That's right. Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's right. We've got a Productivity Commission inquiry on at the moment into Australia's workplace relations.
Yes.
One of the things we're saying is let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. This system, in the main, has served us pretty well for a generation and longer. And if we are going to keep living standards high, we need to make sure that we are seeing wages keep pace with overall economic growth. And that's the worry.
It seems a bit crazy that some sectors of the workforce are governed by a union and award wages, where there's another sector that just don't have any representation. Can you enlighten me as to, or give me an example of some of those sectors that don't have representation?
Well, a lot of the private service sector now is small and medium businesses where there isn't union representation. That's not necessarily a bad thing, and we're not saying that the answer to a strong wage bargaining framework is just to ramp up union coverage again. But we are saying that there is a set of rules in place that work pretty well. You'll see.
Well, you want a fair day's work for fair day's pay. You don't want exploitation in one industry and an award for another.
That's right. And as you see, Australia do very well at the kind of top level, so that the overall economy is travelling well. You want to see a fair split of that between people who earn their money from work and people who earn their money from investments, and that's the bit that has slipped in recent years.
So you suggest that infrastructure from government and private investment from business is one side of the equation?
Yep.
The other half?
The other half is to retain those employment and wage bargaining protections that mean that the wage share of national income can keep up to its historical level. So we've got to be seeing real wage increases, you know, so that people are enjoying better living standards year on year, and that's what's stopped happening in the last couple of years.
Given the fact that we're told that the economy is tightening and it may be tight for another 18 months or 2 years, and I'm no economist, this is just what I read, how does that bode for what you're discussing now?
It's critical to what we're discussing now. The way to restart long-term growth has to be to invest in productivity. So it requires us hiving off some money to say we are going to invest in bridges, road, rail, ports, in broadband, in skills, in education. The things that will give us that next uptick of growth. We got very lucky in the 2000s because just when everyone had their big wobble, the commodities boom kicked in again, and in a sense China came to our rescue by buying all these very important resources we have. We can't rely on that happening again. We've got to do the work now to invest in those.
Well, we're told that that's a once-in-a-lifetime boom. Would you be in a position to comment on that?
Yeah, I suspect that's right. If you look at the, you know, people use this figure of the terms of trade, which is basically how much is the rest of the world paying for our stuff. It was the highest level in 140 years. It's a bit like having a once-in-a-100-year flood.
Yeah.
And it's not going to come back anytime soon. I don't think anyone is arguing that it will. So it's now up to us to make the investments that are going to see the next lift in living standards, and to make sure that not only are we lifting them, but we're keeping them spread fairly across the economy.
Just one last question. There's a lot of people who are in business now that perhaps weren't in business 20 or 30 years ago, either as a contractor or they've got this small business. Is that impacting on your figures at all?
We looked at casualisation.
Okay.
But it's hard to kind of put a dollar value on what that does. Certainly the workforce is a lot more casual now.
It's more fragmented, isn't it, in terms of people owning their own, whether it be a lawn mowing business or a coffee business that visits buildings or think of a window washing business. There are more and more people that are doing that now and working for themselves, and I'm just wondering whether that may have impacted on your figures somehow.
Look, it's certainly impacted on our figures through seeing greater casualisation. So there are benefits to that in, you know, more flexibility, more control over your own life and time, and there are also drawbacks in terms of less security of income. One of the remarkable things that's in what's happened to Australia in the last 25 years is we haven't had a recession at all. So, you know, there are people who've started businesses who've worked very hard and done so in the backdrop of a pretty strong macroeconomic climate. The challenge now is that climate is not going to be as strong, so we have to make sure we're, you know, taking the investment decisions now to drive that extra.
Are you seeing a recession potentially on the horizon?
It's not out of the question at all. I mean, every economy at some point is going to go through a recession. We can't continue to expect that Australia will survive without recession. The big concern, obviously, is the global economy, and in particular China.
Yep.
And China is slowing, and it's worrying a lot of people who look at this stuff. If it continues to slow, we are going to feel the flow-on effects of that, and potentially that can be a recession. I'm not saying it's
going to happen. Depends on how hard the landing's going to be, I guess, doesn't
exactly.
it? Exactly. Yeah. Okay, David, look, thank you for talking with us and sharing your knowledge on this report.
Not at all. Thanks, John.
David Hetherington, Executive Director from Per Capita. They're the independent think tank that produced this report that suggests Australia's living standards face the greatest threat in a generation. And if we don't get that infrastructure spending from government, and I guess the business sector, we're going to be in a lot of trouble.